Well, it's an old joke, but it just works perfectly this morning with the sermon. A young man is in a hotel room by himself in a strange city. He opens the Gideon Bible in the hotel room, and inside the front cover, he sees an inscription. If sick, read Psalm 18. If worried, read Psalm 45. If lonely, read Psalm 92. Since he was lonely, he turned to Psalm 92. And when he was finished, he read the handwritten words in the margin. Still lonely? Call 256-2400 and ask for grace. Well, this is not the grace I had in mind this morning. I was thinking more of the Protestant idea of grace. Central to the belief of many reformers during the Protestant Reformation was the conviction that all human beings are sinners. The Protestant leaders believed that the story of Adam and Eve was literally true. Adam and Eve committed the sin of disobedience to God. Therefore, human beings, all of us descendants of Adam and Eve, are born sinful. The Protestant reformers said that God will forgive our sins if we accept in our hearts that by his death, Jesus atoned for all human sin. The reformers called God's act of forgiveness grace. It is a theology expressed in the words of the old hymn, Amazing Grace. Now, the author of Amazing Grace, John Newton, wrote the words from personal experience. Newton was involved in the Atlantic slave trade. In 1748, he was on a ship when a violent storm battered his vessel off the coast of County Donegal near Ireland. So the storm was so severe that he called out to God for mercy. And that moment marked his spiritual conversion. While his boat was being repaired, he wrote the first verse of what became the hymn Amazing Grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I am found. Was blind, but now I see. Now, the story is often told that at this point, he decided to abandon the slave trade and become a minister and campaign strongly against slavery for the rest of his life. Actually, it took him 7 years after this event before he stopped working as a slave trader. But in 1788, he published a pamphlet he called Thoughts Upon the Slave Trade, in which he described the horrible conditions of slave ships and apologized for his own role. He wrote, "It will always be a subject of humiliating reflection to me that I was once an active instrument in a business at which my heart now shudders." A famous quotation first appeared about 200 years ago. It also shows a deep conviction that human beings are sinners. While watching criminals whom prison guards were taking to the gallows, someone is alleged to have said, "There, but for the grace of God, goes I." It suggests that others' misfortunes could be our own if it were not for God's grace. That was the theology of many of the Protestants in the Protestant Reformation. Traditional Calvinism stressed the utter depravity of human nature and the incapacity to do any good whatsoever without God's grace. For Calvinists, the proper posture is one of submission and repentance. However, Unitarians, and universalists had a much more positive view of human nature. Most of us believe that humans are born capable of both good and evil, and we believe that with a loving upbringing, with a good education, children will grow up to be good adults. Optimistically, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. As a result of this belief, the hymn Amazing Grace did not appear in our 1937 hymnal. It was not in our 1964 hymnal. But something shifted in our acceptance of hymns, and by the early 1990s, when Unitarian Universalists were surveyed and asked what hymn is not currently in our hymnal that you would like to see included in a new one, the one that came up over and over again was the hymn Amazing Grace. However, given our positive view of human nature, many Unitarian Universalists said that they hated one word in that hymn, where it says, "Saved a wretch like me." Unitarian Universalists said, "I'm not a wretch." Now, others who knew the history of the hymn said, "Well, this is a historic acknowledgement of the evil of slave trading. This is a sin we should never forget. So let's leave the word wretch in." Well, the debate went back and forth in the Hymnal Commission in the early 90s. And as a result, we sing Amazing Grace, trying to keep everyone here happy. The Hymnal Commission put an asterisk next to the word wretch. And at the bottom of the page, it suggests that those in the congregation who do not like to sing the word wretch sing, "That saved a soul like me," instead. Well, speaking for myself, I can say that I have never believed that I was a wretch in need of God's grace. However, there is another definition that I like. It comes from the Protestant theologian Paul Tillich. Tillich was one of the 20th century's famous theologians. He taught theology and philosophy at German universities, and then after Hitler took power in 1933, Tillich came to the United States. He was a professor at Union Theological Seminary in New York City, and then later at Harvard University. In a sermon called "You Are Accepted," Tillich started by talking about estrangement, the feeling that others do not like us and that perhaps we are not actually very likable. He said on occasion, "Everyone experiences this feeling of estrangement or separation." And then in the second paragraph of the sermon, he gave a new definition to the word sin. In his sermon, he said, "Sin is separation. To be in a state of sin is to be in a state of separation. We know that we are estranged from something to which we really belong and with which we should be united. We know that the fate of separation is not merely a natural event, but it is an experience in which we actively participate, in which our whole personality is involved. Separation constitutes the meaning of the word sin. It is this which is the very state of our entire existence, from its very beginning to its end." Now, another German who came to the United States at the same time in 1933 to escape Hitler was the Jewish psychiatrist Erich Fromm. While Tillich used the word estrangement, Fromm used the word alienation to describe the same experience. Fromm wrote that when we feel alienated, we do not experience ourselves as the active bearers of our own powers, the active bearers of our own richness. Or as I put it, we feel like people don't like us, and we fear that we are not very likable. For Tillich, the theologian, human sin is separation. For Fromm, the psychologist, mental illness is alienation. The words are different, but the idea is the same. Both suggest that we suffer when we feel separate from others, estranged from the world. Grace, wrote Tillich, begins when we reconnect to the beauty of the world and when we reconnect to the kindness of other people. Grace is the positive reconnection that causes the feelings of alienation and estrangement to disappear. The title of Tillich's sermon on grace was, "You Are Accepted." Grace is when we feel accepted by others and by the world. In this sense, he said, grace is central to our well-being. Central, Fromm would say, to our mental health. In my own experience, support from other people often helps me reach this sense of grace. I experience a sense of estrangement because of my own imperfections. The support I receive from others helps me come to grips with my own self-doubt. My friends and family help me to assess realistically who I am, to face my mistakes, and to learn to accept myself. I am thankful to my friends, to my colleagues, to my family, for the feeling of connection, the moments of grace that come as a result of their help and their support. I suspect this is also an experience you have had. I think of an example. Imagine a person whose skin has been scarred by illness and feels unattractive and separate from others. Imagine that in a moment of discouragement, a friend calls and offers positive statements of encouragement. This simple act is a moment of grace. Music, poetry, the visual arts all create in me a feeling of connection. The colors of a painting enter my eyes and stir my heart. The words of a poem enter my brain and stimulate my mind. I am thankful to the poets, the painters, the performers, the composers for the mysterious moments of grace created by their art, those moments of reconnection. Imagine, for example, a person who's looking for a job and goes through a week of rejection. She comes to church and sings with others. And in the act of singing together, she feels connected to others as the sounds of the music vibrate through her body and heal her soul. This is a moment of grace. The beauty of nature contributes to my feelings of connection. The smells of the Gulf waters, the beauty of a bird soaring in the air here in Sarasota, the glorious beauty of our garden and the flowers. They give me a feeling of peace and acceptance as I feel part of nature. So imagine a young person whose parents are angry with him for having trouble in school, and I came up with this example because about a week ago I was up in Maryland and my son teaches music in a high school, which means he also has to lead the pep band at football games. So on Friday evening, a week ago, I was at a football game in the evening. So imagine a young person going to a game like that on a Friday evening, going to a high school football game, sitting in the stands, feeling estranged from his school because he hasn't done well, and his family who's not pleased with his grades. He sits outside in the stands, feeling the cool air, and he looks out, as I did a week ago, at the setting of the sun, at the sky, and at the appearance of a sliver of the moon in the sky. He finds himself looking intensely into the sky over the school rooftops with an intense awareness of a whole universe of beauty, a natural world full of stars and the moon and wonders that put his small problems into perspective. This encounter with nature is a moment of grace. Grace is a marvelous word which describes a significant experience. In my own life, I give thanks for the grace of the teachers I have had. They gave me their attention in spite of my learning disabilities. I am thankful for the grace of my friends. They gave me their affection in spite of the fact that I am often shy and reserved. I am thankful for the grace of church members. They support me in spite of my imperfections. Of course, life has its hard moments. I maintain a sense of realism about the world and a sense of humility about myself. Feeling a connection with other people and with the world comes with the realization that humans can sometimes be cruel to each other, that illness comes to all of us, and that a beautiful sky can also bring a terrible storm. I do not deny the reality of suffering. Nevertheless, within this realism, I still experience moments of grace. When I watch the sunrise over the trees, when a small child in church gives me a warm smile, when we all sing together, when I taste a crisp apple in October, these can be moments of grace. Now, Paul Tillich was not a perfect man. We learned a lot about that after his death when his wife, Hannah, published a personal autobiography, a memoir, about the frequent infidelity in his marriage. Although they never divorced, Hannah and Paul did not have an easy relationship. The revelations gave new context to the sermon in which Tillich said, "To be in a state of sin is to be in a state of separation." In 1975, 10 years after Tillich had died, his wife Hannah visited the theological school I was attending in California. She sat in on a class I was in. I was actually giving a presentation that day, and this woman came in and sat in the back of the room, and I thought, who is that? She looks familiar. Her picture was on the back of her book, but I couldn't quite place it. Later, when I found out who it was, I thought, I should have really worked harder on that presentation. Always prepare. You never know who your audience is going to be. But during the break in the class, several of us went outside, Hannah Tillich, to have a cigarette. We were sitting on the steps of the school. It was a sunny afternoon. And we talked with her about her husband. She said, "Paulus had difficulty talking about his feelings. Instead, he transformed his personal experiences into the abstractions of his sermons. He never talked directly about his fear of death, or his lust for life, or his feelings of inadequacy. But it was all there, in abstraction in his sermons. And I thought about a passage from the sermon called You Are Accepted. I wondered what personal experiences were behind the abstract words. He said, "Grace strikes us when we are in great pain and restlessness. Grace strikes us when we walk through the dark valley of a meaningless and empty life. It strikes us when we feel that our separation is deeper than usual because we have violated another life, a life which we loved or from which we were estranged. It strikes us when our disgust for our own being, our indifference, our weakness, our hostility, and our lack of direction and composure have become intolerable to us. Grace strikes us when year after year the longing for perfection of life does not appear, when the old compulsions reign within us as they have for decades, when despair destroys all joy and courage. Sometimes, at that moment, a wave of light breaks into our darkness. And it is as though a voice were saying, you are accepted. You are accepted. Accepted by that which is greater than you, and the name of which you do not know. Do not ask for the name now. Perhaps later you will find it. Do not seek for anything. Do not perform anything. Do not intend anything. Simply accept the fact that you are accepted. If this happens to us, we experience grace. My wish for all of you is that you will feel accepted. Accepted by yourself, by your family, and by this church. May grace be with each of you.